Welcome to the We Collide podcast. We're a growing community of everyday chicks colliding with Jesus in our mess, our pain, our joy, and our stories. We value showing up as we truly are, so that's what you'll find here. Walls and masks being torn down so that we can allow Jesus to meet us where we truly are and hear about other women doing the same. We can't wait to collide with you.
Be vulnerable before the Lord and go, Lord, yes, Tiffany, my wife was the one that had the affair, but you know what? How did I contribute to this mess? You come before the Lord humbled. You come before the Lord aggressively. You know, approach the throne of grace with confidence. Why? Because you're going to be met with grace and love.
Welcome to the We Collide podcast. I'm Willow Weston, the founder and director of Collide. And today I'm so excited that I get to interview Rick and Tiffany Bullman. They outline their story in their award-winning book, Mended, One Couple's Journey from Betrayal to Imperfect Beauty. And Mended is a heartfelt story of redemption and grace that offers a window into the lives of an ordinary family with an extraordinary story of God colliding with them in the mess of their marriage and giving them this message that you're about to hear today. So Rick and Tiffany, thank you guys so much for hopping on the We Collide podcast and hanging out with me today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah. So let's just start by, can you guys kind of invite us into how you two met and the sort of ideals and hopes that you had about marriage when you first said, I do?
Sure. Our church in Southern California received a new pastor, and it happened to be Tiffany's pastor that she grew up with in Washington State. And Tiffany made the move to California to for school Bible college. And I saw her one day on a Sunday morning singing on the platform. She's got a beautiful voice. And so she's singing on the platform, and I'm just captivated by this pure beauty that stood before me, you know, and I wanted to meet her. And and so I met her, and, you know, we connected. And, you know, she went off to Bible college and I lived quite a distance away. But then I moved to her area where the Bible college was to pursue the same schooling. And we reconnected. And this is really the short version of it, but we reconnected and, you know, started dating, and we never fought, ever fought. And in fact, I remember one time sitting in her room, we were just talking, and I said to her, I go, do you think we're going to get married someday? And she said, what'd you say, honey?
I said, probably, but I'm not going to marry you until we have our first fight.
And which actually thought, I was like, why do you want to fight? And she's like, well, no, you know, I mean, let's argue and see what that's like. Like, she doesn't know if I have a temper, you know, are we going to be able to, you know, reconcile? And what's that going to be like? Right. Because I mean, literally for months and months, we just never argued. We always agreed. And then one day I scared her when I was walking her back to her apartment, and she got mad at me and walked off. And then I was like, will you marry me now? You know? And so, and so that kind of started it. And, we started having early conversations regarding what we thought married life would be like, how many kids and stuff. And right. You want to speak to that? I mean,
we did just talk about, you know, the fairy tale, the wedding part, and the how many kids and what will their names be. Yeah. We used to sit and write it all down in a little book. And yeah,
we talked about like our childhood, and, you know, we were pretty much surprised that
we grew up
the same, you know, same values and same, you know, biblical beliefs and Christianity and stuff like that.
So we both came from Christian homes and, you know,
very ministry oriented homes.
Yes.
So we thought it would be easy.
I love, first of all, that Rick, you say that you moved to pursue Bible college, and instead of you moved to pursue her, I like how you kind of forget to mention that your Bible college happened to be right by her in California. But also that you, Tiffany, gave him permission to totally go and blow it and be a jerk so that you guys could get married. That's awesome. I bet my husband would be jealous of that permission. You guys mentioned in the introduction of your book that the baggage from your childhood was carried into your marriage and caused a lot of friction that led to, and you say, intense arguing, emotional abuse, and eventually an affair. I'm wondering if you guys could go back to dating life, that time where you talked about, you know, having similar childhoods. You talked about making that book of like how many kids you would want and the kind of life that you would want to live. If you could go back to that place in your dating life, what would be some advice you would give to your younger selves on the work needed to deal with the baggage before you carry it into your marriage?
Well, I think that if we would have gone a bit deeper when we were talking and discussed things like unwritten rules and what my dad did growing up and mm-hmm. how Rick's dad did things growing up, then we would have learned about things that were important to us, like locking up the house at night and little nitpicky things like how to load the dishwasher the correct way.
There isn't there?
There really is.
I think, you know, going back in time, if you will, and just talking to my younger self, I think Tiffany's right. I think we hit a lot of the surfacey stuff, but I think if we would have really started having some serious conversations about what our parents were like, how they managed us and our siblings, how they punished, how they worked. Was your dad around? Was your dad not around? What were some of the things that were quirky about your parents that you liked, that you disliked? I think at that point, we probably would have found out that we actually, as closely we were raised the same, we were actually raised very differently.
Yes.
And we didn't realize that because we only touched the surface, Willow. We didn't realize the differences. We just saw the surface likeness. We went to church. Our parents were in ministry. We were in ministry. Oh, we're the same. No, we need to get underneath that. And I think it would have helped to kind of dug a little deeper so we wouldn't have been surprised as much as things unfolded.
Right. And you saw what you wanted to see. I think that's true of all of us. So often when we're dating, we see what we want to see and we unpack what we want to unpack and kind of leave the rest for later. You mentioned, and you brought it up a minute ago, but Dr. Les and Leslie Parrott's teaching on unspoken rules, which are the expectations one spouse doesn't realize they have while the other spouse is unaware that the rules even exist. What unspoken rules did you guys find you had early on in your marriage?
Well, one that just always seems to stick out in my mind was that Tiffany, she grew up with her father locking the doors and like at night, you know, we're going to lock the windows, lock the doors. The house is safe. The area that I grew up in growing up, where my childhood, we never unlocked the door. We never locked the doors. In fact, my dad would leave the key in the ignition of the car that was parked out front and the door was unlocked to the vehicle. I mean, it was just polar opposites. So in Tiffany's mind, she had it, this is what the man does, this is what the man should do. And it was kind of like a rule in her heart that this is what my husband's going to do. So when I didn't do it, then I was violating this rule that she had in her heart that unbeknownst to me, I was violating. It wasn't even on my radar. She would ask me, hey, did you lock the door? Like if we're getting in bed, and I'd be like, I think so, but we're fine. And it wasn't because I didn't care. It was just because I wasn't raised that way. It wasn't even on my radar, believe it or not. And so for Tiffany, she would just get upset and go downstairs and lock the door herself or double check it. And so to me, Which I think all husbands should do anyway, Willow. I mean, come on. We are the protector of the home. We need to be, and we need to do that regardless. But it was this rule in her mind and in her heart that I needed to be doing those things. But because I wasn't raised that way, I didn't think about it. I didn't do them. And so therefore, she felt as if I was violating some rule that I was unaware of. Does that make sense?
Oh, it totally makes sense. I mean, I'm kind of smirking here, laughing at my own experience with this. When Rob and I we've been married 21 years. And when we were first dating, we were going on a trip to meet a bunch of friends up in Whistler, Canada. And he came to pick me up. And I started loading the trunk because he was fixing the windshield wipers on my car because he thought they needed fixing. I didn't. And I load the trunk of the car with the suitcases, and then he comes back and he's like, takes it all out of the car and reorganizes all the suitcases. And we start getting in this huge fight. And mind you, this is the day that he was proposing to me, but I didn't know. So we're in this big fight about why would you unload all the suitcases? I put them in there. They fit. It's fine. And it turns out that in his family of origin, his mom packed all the suitcases and put them on the front steps of the front door. And the dad came, grabbed the suitcases. And it was the dad's job, quote unquote, to load the car and pack the suitcases. And so Rob felt like I took away his job as a man. And my response was, I was raised without a dad in the home. And it was just me and my mom. And when we needed to do something, we got it done. We didn't sit down and wait for a man to pack our bags in a car. That wasn't an option for us. And so I'm laughing as you guys tell the story, because I think so many people who are married out there listening to this are like, oh yes. And it is our family of origin experience clashing with each other, right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Real quick, here's even a small one. Like, that's a big protective one, but let's just go into household cleaning real quick. I mean, when we first got married, like, I grew up doing the dishes and, you know, it was part of one of my chores, but my parents didn't make me scour the sink every night when I did it. We scoured the sink, I don't know, ever so often. We rinse it out and make sure it's clean, but we didn't scour it with an SOS pad. So I grew up where we just didn't do that all the time. And so Tiffany, I remember when we first got married, I didn't scour the sink. And then she's in there scrubbing the sink frantically and kind of annoyed. And she's just thinking, I did a job halfway. And it's like, well, why didn't you scour the sink? And it's like, well, I don't know. I didn't think it needed scouring. Again, it was something that she was taught, family of origin. It was a rule in her heart that it was unspoken because it was unknown even to her and to me. It just was. Does that make sense?
Oh, it completely makes sense. Tiffany, you describe in the book these sweet memories that you have of your dad and a desire for your husband to be like your dad and how that desire caused issues. What kind of issues do you think it caused for you?
My dad is a lot like me. He rarely sits down. He's always cleaning something or checking the oil on all the cars, or when I was young, he used to polish everyone's shoes on Saturdays. He would we would go to church on Sunday with shiny black shoes. He changed all the light bulbs. He mowed the lawn, pulled the weeds. And for me, I just felt like Rick wasn't doing that. So I was unloved. I felt unloved. And with the whole not locking up thing, that made me feel unsafe. And so because I felt unsafe, I figured that Rick didn't love me.
And meanwhile, Rick, invite us in a little bit. You talk about your adoption story, and I don't know how much you'd want to share now, but if you're willing to share a bit about how you think that shaped you and what you brought into your marriage as a result of the stories you've been telling yourself since the day that your dad gave you up for adoption, because I think if people can understand what was going on with Tiffany inside of her head and then what was going on inside of your head, it paints this very simple picture of what can so easily happen in marriages to create distance.
Yeah. I didn't realize how much trauma I had because of the adoption. I didn't see it as trauma, but I did realize through our counseling process with Dr. Ted and Diane Roberts that it affected me in deeper ways. And so when I was 3 years old, my parents got a divorce. And when I was three, my dad remarried when I was five. My mom remarried when I was five. The gentleman that my mom remarried is still married to that man today. But he was an ex-Vietnam sergeant in the Marine Corps, very heavy on the disciplinary side. My stepmom was more of a monster, like a step monster than a step mom, very verbally and physically abusive. I actually even had my name changed. So I went from, like, my birth name is Anthony Alfred Drago. And then my dad, Rick, when I was seven, he really loved me and cared for me as his own. And he said, you know, he wanted to adopt me. But my dad, at the time, Tony, he had to decide whether or not to give me up, if you will. And he did, to save $140-something a month in child support. That's, I guess, I didn't realize that. I think I was internalizing, and I didn't get it as a kid, but as I got older, I started to think, wow, that's what I was worth, $140-something a month to give up. And so my dad, my stepdad, Rick, adopted me. And with that adoption came a name change. And so I went from Anthony Alfred Drago to Glenn Richmond Bowman III. But I go by Rick because I just like Rick better due to my middle name, whatever. Anyway, I just had this. But when I was living it with my parents, my mom and my stepdad, now my lawfully my real father now because he adopted me, I didn't feel like it was truly my home because I had two sisters and a brother and they were halves. And so I didn't really feel at home, like this was my family. I felt partial there. But then when I would go and stay with my dad and my stepmom, I didn't feel like it was my home as well. So I was a kid without a home. That was how it felt. And so I always felt like I struggled for many years of feeling not wanted, not loved, not valued.
Like you didn't belong.
Like I didn't belong, exactly. And where do I belong? And so now I have my own family. So finally I belong. But yet I keep failing my wife because we keep fighting and apparently I'm not doing things good enough. And so that just chipped away at my pride, my ego, whatever, you know. It broke me down. And so I would overcompensate with, you know, verbal abuse, trying to control things, you know, being disrespectful with my words and my actions at times. It really messed with me psychologically. But it wasn't until Tiffany and I went through a good year and a half of intense counseling, week in and week out often, that I was able to start to connect the dots to my past trauma, to my present day experiences, and then begin to heal from that. And, you know, so as far as headspace goes, much better place now, but I had a lot of unknown baggage in my life. So it was difficult.
Yeah. And I think that's what I love so much about how you guys talk about your stories, you sort of lay out these family of origin stories and how they collided with one another. We use that terminology around here a lot. These sort of wounded collisions that we have with people because of the stories we bring into our collisions. And that's why when you start to tell some sort of very ordinary marital experiences, you can also see how those created hurt and pain and more stories of not belonging, more stories of not feeling loved and safe. I love the simple story you guys share about the grocery bags in your second story apartment, because I think it's a story that all married couples can resonate with. Can you guys share that story and invite us into what you think is going on when couples have these kinds of interactions?
Well, we shortly after we got married, we moved from Southern California up to the Pacific Northwest, up to Seattle, Washington. And we lived in a one bedroom apartment on the second story. Now, at first, it was just the two of us, and, you know, we weren't buying that much food. So I would go grocery shopping, and I was young and healthy. So I would carry it up the stairs and put it away. And Rick would ask me, mm-hmm. Do you need help? And I would say, no, I've got it. You're good. But then we had a baby, and then we were buying twice as much. And I would take the baby grocery shopping. And then when I got home, I would take Caleb and a couple bags and walk up to the second story apartment. And Rick would take Caleb and then he would sit down on the couch. And I would go back downstairs and get more groceries and walk up the second story and put them on the counter and then turn and look at Rick. And he wouldn't say anything, but neither would I. And so I would get mad inside. And I think one of the worst things that I do, and I really, really try hard to not do it anymore, but I did catch myself the other day doing it again, is I expect Rick to read my mind. So surely he can see by my, you know, facial expressions and my body language that I'm getting angry. And why isn't he offering to let me play with the baby and he make 7 trips up and down the stairs? But I didn't say anything and I didn't ask for help. And I just got more and more mad because he wasn't reading my mind.
Yeah. And so I think that, well, when we got married, I was 21, Tiffany was 23, yeah. and we were really young. And, you know, I just think now from a biblical perspective that men are called to love their wives as Christ loved the church, and Christ's ultimate way of loving the church was to die for the church, the ultimate act of service. And I think that that paints a beautiful picture of how we are to love our spouse, our wives, is we are to serve extremely to our spouse. I am supposed to serve my wife. That's how Jesus led, was through service. And that might even mean, you know, I pray it doesn't ever come to it, but it could mean dying for my wife. But there are other ways to die to my wife. I die to my selfish ambitions, die to my certain wants, maybe put what I want on the back burner to serve her. That's the call of a husband, is to serve his wife. And so I would say that, and it's really hard when you're 21. I mean, we just, you know, our brains aren't even fully developed until we're 25, yeah. To be honest with you. So,
plus, Tiffany just gave you a permission slip to be a jerk so you could get married.
That's it. Yeah, exactly. I'm just Hey, you won the argument.
So confusing. you guys. Go ahead, Drake.
Oh no, I was just going to say, our advice to people and like in this type of scenario is husbands say, hey, just ask your wife. You handed me the child. Do you want me to go get the kid? Do you want me to go down and get the groceries and you stay up here with the baby and put them away? Like, how can I help you? Instead of just assuming, oh, she brought home the child, handed him to me. I'm just going to play with our son or our daughter and let her, take the 17 trips back and forth up and down the stairs.
I think Rick often now will say, now that we're old and mature, he will say,
older.
Okay, what can I do to help you? And he says it all the time,
Yeah.
And we weren't that mature when we got married.
I didn't even think to ask that.
You guys talk in the book about kind of having a competition on, who works the most, who works how many hours, who makes the money. And I love your challenge, Rick, when you just shared as a man that really like your job is to outserve your wife. And it would be so cool if in our marriages we had a competition and it was who can outserve the other. Not for bragging rights, but for a better marriage. But tell me a little bit about, because I think so many people can resonate with that competition game of who works the most, who's doing this, who's doing that. Why do you think that's so common in marriage?
That's a really good question, Willow. Why is it so common in marriage? Let me just take a stab at it. I think our spouse is not our competition. They should never be our competition. We should never view them as competition. We are equal and we're working toward the same goal. And I think when part of the reason why competition seems to make its way into a marriage and manifests itself in unhealthy ways, I think a lot of it has to do with unresolved childhood issues. I think that plays a part, maybe not feeling valued, maybe not feeling loved or honored or recognized. And, you always need adoration. You always need adoration. You always need people to come in and tell you you're doing a good job. And I think to a certain extent, we're all human and we all need that. But it can become unhealthy depending on if we lacked it so much as far as getting it as a kid growing up. And so I think that part of the problem and why competition between spouses is present, who makes the most money, who works the hardest, is because there's just something unhealthy at a subconscious level, possibly to the spouse, to where they feel like they have to win with their wife or their husband. And I think the deeper question is why, if somebody is like that, why am I that way? Why do I care that I make more money than my wife? Why is that an issue? There's a reason for that. And it's going to take some digging. It's going to take some, an honest look at yourself to in your childhood and your history to try to pinpoint why I feel like I have to do that. And I just think that there's just something unhealthy there foundationally, and they need to get to the bottom of it to stop it.
Right. Well, it's such a common dialogue. I mean, it's like an everyday dialogue. Well, I worked 8 hours. Well, I was at home with the kids 8 hours. It happens in every home. Oftentimes with my husband and I, we almost have to have a moment where we say out loud, hey, we are on the same team. We're not on the same team. You guys quote Jewish Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel in your book when he says, words create worlds. What world were you creating that led to the devastating place your marriage found itself in? And why do you think our words are so powerful?
Wow. Our words are so powerful. They can either tear down or build up. Mm-hmm. And my words with Tiffany. Now, mind you, this wasn't all the time. This wasn't every day. Every day I told her I loved her. Every day I told her she was beautiful. But a lot of the times I would use abusive words in tearing her down, at her person. If I didn't like something, I would say something like, and I'm just going to be real with you. I don't do this now, but I did. And I'm embarrassed to say it, but it is what it is. I would just say, what's wrong with you? I've asked you not to do this. Why are you doing this? And then it would eventually turn into, are you crazy? There's something wrong with you. And then, are you mental? And then it was like, but when you get that, month after month, year after year, it just destroys you psychologically. Mm-hmm. And so now she's 17 years of dealing with garbage like that, where, and I'll let her speak to it, her self-worth and questioning her own insanity, or her own sanity, I should say, not insanity, her own sanity, was making her feel almost less than human and just like garbage. And so it gave her low self-esteem and it wrecked her. And then it positioned her to where a gentleman came into her life and started to scratch her where she emotionally itched. And because she was so broken that any sort of kindness from anyone, male or female, was like a breath of fresh air. It gave her a sense of dignity. It gave her strength. It gave her meaning. And when that button was pushed, it was like the trap was set and she took the bait. Tiffany, do you want to speak to that?
Well, I think that after hearing the negative comments and the put downs for a while, like Rick said, it did really tear me down. And after a while, it's all in my head, all that I heard, and I would replay it to myself over and over again. And even when I heard something nice, that's not what got replayed over and over in my head. It was just the negative. So even the good things, even the nice things what am I trying to say here?
Didn't kind of overshadow all the negative.
Yeah. The negative is what stood out to me.
Right. And Tiffany, at the same time that all of this was going on, you had your family of origin stories, and then you had these very ordinary marital conflicts that we all have about grocery bags and who does the most work. And, you know, you were having these experiences with Rick tearing you down with his words. You refer to Rick's mistress in the book, and though she was in a sexual relationship, you certainly felt betrayed by her. And I think this is a really important discussion for us to have together. Can you tell us about her and why she caused so many issues?
Yes. Rick's mistress was his job. And his computer and his phone. He was always working. Even if he was home with us, he was not really there with us. He wasn't present. If we were in a car driving and on a date, he would take a work call if his phone rang. If he was spending time with our kids and playing catch, he would take a work call. And our kids, that stood out to them, he was on his computer or on his phone, and he just didn't pay attention.
How much of that do you think led to you having a physical sexual affair, Tiffany?
Well, first of all, let me say that even though Rick neglected and had, negative verbal
abuse,
if you will, I made the choice to have the affair. And that's something that that's important for me to get across, is that nothing that he did warranted me having the affair. That was a choice that I made, and I could have gone for help. I could have gone to my pastor or a counselor and said, I need help, but I didn't. Like Rick said, this family friend saw the gaping holes in my life and sort of slid right in. And I think that, yes, all of it contributed greatly to me having an affair, because I didn't feel loved and I didn't feel cared for.
And that affair lasted 3 years. How would you describe the sort of emotional and spiritual place you were in when you were living this double life of sorts?
My walk with the Lord was not what it should have been. If I would have had a strong relationship with the Lord, if I would have been in the Word daily and praying and living in complete devotion to the Lord, then I don't think that I would have fallen like I did. I think that I would have had the wisdom and the knowledge to say no, and that my heart would have been guarded and my mind would have been guarded. I was leading worship while we were at our church and while I was having the affair, and the leading was very robotic for me, but I will say that the worship was authentic and it was very genuine. I still loved the Lord, and there were some meaningful interactions that took place between the Lord and I while I led worship, even though I wasn't living a godly life.
I'm thinking about so many people listening who are in these same places in their marriage where things are hard and layered and complicated, and years of fighting over the same things and not dealing with the baggage that we brought into our marriages. And I'm just wondering, Tiffany, as you think back, were there moments where you maybe made sort of smaller choices of betrayal that if you could, do you think about if you could go back and do them differently, would that have ended up saving you from this ultimate sort of physical betrayal that you ended up having?
You know, when I look back to where everything first started, I don't know if you remember, but when Facebook first came out, you used to be able to poke people. Do you remember that? And
I never did it. I always thought it was weird.
Well, that's how my affair began.
Just kind of that banter back and forth.
Yes, by poking on Facebook, and then after that we would message. And just chit chat, you know. But then after that, I was having discussions with him, you know, like, how was your day? And this kind of stuff. And, well, this happened. And those are conversations that I should be having with my husband, you know. And if you're...
That's the thing, though, that people don't realize, is it doesn't start out with some sort of like instant, mad, passionate love affair. It's a slow road of a bunch of small choices over the top of some mess that your marriage isn't dealing with.
Right, right. That's exactly it. Yeah, it absolutely does not start with the sex.
Affairs don't start in the bedroom.
No.
They start with words.
Yeah.
It start with Facebook posts, and it just, like Tiffany said, it progresses to an instant message, a conversation. Now you're asking questions, and then those questions go from normal day questions to more personal questions. And now you're complimenting each other. And then it just, it's like a big snowball. Next thing you know,
you've crossed a line.
Mm-hmm. And I love that you point out in your book that everyone has the capacity to live a double life. And I've always said this myself, because I don't know why people act like, I'd never have an affair. It doesn't really take much, people. We're all capable of it. Why do you guys think it's so important for each of us in our marriages to recognize our own capability to go wayward?
You know, this great question. Tiffany, years ago, when we were youth pastors in California, we'd been married probably for about 4 or 5 years at the time, we were seeing pastor friends of ours having affairs, like not actually seeing the affair, but we would find out that they had an affair. It would either be the husband or the wife. And Tiffany one day said, man, I could never do that. And she goes, could you, you couldn't do that either. And I said, well, I don't know. And she got mad at me. And I go, what are you mad about? And she's like, well, why are you saying that you don't know if you would have an affair or not? I would never do that. And I'm like, Tiffany, I don't ever think I will. I never intend to do that. But I'm not naive enough to think that I'm not vulnerable enough to do it. If the right circumstances approached and the enemy worked on me long enough, the enemy of my soul, and I was tore down, you don't know what you're going to do. To say that you would never do something, I think is kind of ignorant and naive. And so she was irritated with me because I wouldn't take that stance. Now, Tiffany, how do you feel about that now? I mean, and I say that not in a very like confrontational way. It's, you know, she's like, now I get it.
Yeah.
You know, and,
mm-hmm. Well, right. Like, I think if we all recognize that we're capable of adultery, it's like when you know you have to fight a battle, you put on your armor.
Yes.
You set safeguards in place. You have sort of rules that protect your marriage. But when you think, I'd never do that, that there's no boundaries that are protecting your marriage. You're not wearing armor. And the temptation is there for people every day.
Right.
Exactly. Found out your response right away was questioning God's ability to fix the mess. And I love how you describe having a moment where you heard God say, I can when I have willing hearts. Yeah, well, what did it look like for you guys to have willing hearts to say, God, if you can fix this mess?
Well, I think for me, I was so shocked and could not believe that Rick would forgive me after I had done such an unspeakable thing that, you know, of course I wanted to work it out with him. But it was accepting the forgiveness mm-hmm. for me that made it really hard. I couldn't understand how he could forgive me.
For me, when I felt like the Lord say, you know, I can when I have willing hearts, I didn't know if I was willing in the moment. But it was the next day. That was the night of, like, 3 hours old of the news. And then the next day in the afternoon, less than 24 hours from finding out, I was driving with my pastor and we weren't really even talking, but I just blurted out of the blue, but she's still my wife. And, you know, and I recognized the emotion behind those words. And then I thought, huh. And then I just prayed to the Lord, maybe I'm more willing than I thought last night. You know, I mean, obviously there's still a love for my wife. And for me, the willing piece was, I was a senior pastor at the time, and probably for the last year and a half leading up to this, the Lord was having me on a journey to see the gospel in everything, especially in my teaching. It doesn't matter if I was teaching Old Testament, New Testament, minor prophet, major prophet, epistle, didn't matter. How could I see the gospel if I'm teaching Leviticus? Where's the gospel when I'm teaching on Obadiah, whatever, you know? And I got so enthralled in the gospel message that it was really on the forefront of my mind. And I really felt like the Lord said, Rick, you have an opportunity here to model the gospel to Tiffany, meaning forgiveness. She wronged you. But then I would have this conversation, but Lord, and I remember where I was. I was in our driveway in my car before I got out. And I'm like, but she betrayed me. And Jesus said to me, you know, it wasn't an audible voice or anything, but I just, these words, these thoughts came in my mind when I made that accusation, but she betrayed me. He said, yeah, I know what that feels like. But you know, she didn't stick by my side and be my wife. Yeah. 11 of my disciples weren't at the foot of the cross when I was hanging for them. They were all hiding, afraid. But I feel in everything I said, it was like, wow, the Lord has experienced this himself. And then I really felt like the Lord said to me, Rick, everything that Tiffany has done to you, you have done to me. Have you ever committed idolatry? Have you ever put anything before me? Have you ever betrayed me, my trust, taken advantage of my love, take advantage of my grace? And of course, the answer is yes, 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 and yes. And then it was like the Lord said, if I could forgive you, can you find it in your heart to forgive your wife? And it was, now, I'm not saying that that was easy. Like, oh, that sounds like a good 3-minute conversation. And now I've turned it over. No, because I know everybody who is listening to this podcast, a lot of people would go, well, I hear what you're saying, but yeah, I don't know that I could. I get that. I totally get that. But for me, with where I was at, and because I was so gospel focused for a year and a half leading up to this, I feel like the Lord was really prepping my heart to make the right choice in that moment.
Right. I mean, it's one thing to know the gospel, one thing to teach the gospel, and it's a completely another thing to live it. And it sounds like the Lord was saying, I'm actually calling you to live out the gospel, which is an incredibly hard thing to do.
Forgiveness is not a one-off. Forgiveness in choosing to forgive my wife, I had to choose sometimes multiple times during the day because I would have trigger after trigger after trigger. No, and I'd work through it. We're on the road to forgiveness. I'm going to forgive her. And then I'd be fine for a moment. And then I'd get angry again. Nope, I'm going to forgive her. Jesus forgave me. You know, it wasn't easy. Forgiveness is not an easy thing to do.
You guys describe in your book, your journey from betrayal to imperfect beauty. And for those who are listening who find themselves smack dab in the mess, whether it's betrayal or other brokenness, damage, neglect, abuse in their marriage, what do you want to say to them that you think they need to hear to begin to believe that beauty is possible out of that mess?
I would say, cling to Jesus, and I'll unpack what I mean real quickly. I'm a pastor, so I won't go sermon on you, I promise. The Apostle Paul writes in Philippians that the Holy Spirit, our comforter, can give us peace that surpasses all understanding, that is beyond understanding. In other words, we can have peace when it doesn't make sense to have peace. We can have hope when it doesn't make sense to have hope. It is a supernatural gift from God, the Holy Spirit, to his child. And because that power exists, I would encourage people, tap into that. Cling to the Lord. Cling to the Holy Spirit. Pray and ask for peace because he's the one that's going to sustain you. If your spouse really wants, if both of you want to try to work it out and put your best foot forward, and you do the hard work, it's not going to be easy. It's not going to happen overnight. But when you take the steps together and you're willing to do that, and then you're willing to allow the Lord to do what David did, search my heart, O God, and know my thoughts, know my innermost being. Be vulnerable before the Lord and go, Lord, yes, Tiffany, my wife was the one that had the affair. But you know what? how did I contribute to this mess? You come before the Lord humbled. You come before the Lord aggressively. You know, approach the throne of grace with confidence. Why? Because you're going to be met with grace and love. And so you just get to Jesus. And if both of you are willing to do that, I as well, coupled with counseling, you're going to need counseling. We would not be here if it wasn't for trained professionals walking us through all of this. We don't have it in us. We couldn't do it. We're not that smart.
Plus you just have to have somebody who's going to walk beside you. You basically need somebody who's going to take you both by the hand and lead you to where you're supposed to be and point out what you need to fix, and you need to do this and you need to do that. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
So I would say Jesus all the way. Have a heart to want to work it out, you know, be willing to do that and get some great counseling. And this isn't a shameless plug, but Pure Desire Ministry out of Gresham, Oregon, phenomenal. They specialize in this. This is the group of people, the clinicians who got Tiffany and I back to health. And they still walk with us even today. And it's been 5 years and we don't see them a lot, but we do have interaction and they still check in and see how we're doing. And so you need a team of people cheering you on, coupled with the Lord and you just saying, I'm going to open up my heart and be humble before the Lord and have him do a work, not just in me, but in my spouse who failed morally. Mm-hmm. And we're going to do this together. If you can get to that place and surrender to that way of thinking and that willingness to go down that road, you'll be amazed. You provide the heart, he'll provide the miracle.
You know, I'm trusting that God is using you guys right now to speak to someone. And I love that you say your mess has become your message. And isn't that how God works? That's my story too, with how Collide came to be, God using my pain to help other people in theirs. And your guys' story of pain in your marriage is helping other people in their marriages with their pain and brokenness. How has that brought some sense of redemption to all of this for you guys?
When we got to the other side, at first it was scary, the mm-hmm. thought of writing the book. I mean, imagine going to church every Sunday and when you walk in the door, they put the biggest sin that you committed all week up on the screen for everyone to see. You know, I mean, that's a daunting thing. But when we got to the other side and we saw that we like each other now,
mm-hmm.
It was so important for us after coming through the fire that instead of picking up our belongings and walking off into the sunset, we wanted to pick up buckets of water and turn around and go back into the fire and help the other couples who were trying to get through the fire also.
And to what it's done for us emotionally is, you know, the Lord said, you provide the heart, I'll provide the miracle. The miracle is not just the restoration of my marriage. The miracle wasn't just the restoration of our family unit as a whole, our four kids and everybody getting to a place of health, but the miracle that other people, that God's going to use the very thing that the enemy tried to destroy and flip it on its head and go, no, now you made a bigger mess to the devil. Watch this. I'm going to use this and actually help other people. I mean, Tiffany and I, we offer marriage coaching and we met with a couple in a different state and we do it online. We do it face to face. It's like you're in the same room. It works. And we met with them for like 2 hours.
Yeah.
And when we were done, we both are just like, we just feel God's pleasure in an intense way. Like, well done. Thank you for being vulnerable. You could just feel the pleasure of the Lord. And it just excites us to do this. We can't do anything else.
I was thinking, as you guys were both sharing, your vulnerability and your bravery are to be admired, and God is going to use those things to take your story and help others in theirs. And that's just amazing. I know we have to come to a close and we could talk forever, but how can people continue to connect with you guys and grab a copy of your book?
It's very simply, if you just want to go to our website, there's many ways to get there, but keeping it simple, go to rickandtiffany.com or you can go to getmended.org. It takes you to the same place, but rickandtiffany.com will take you there. You can order our book. You can see other, offerings that we have, marriage coaching and whatnot. You can connect with us at Facebook. We're there, and as well as on Instagram, and just kind of always trying to be an encouragement to others with weekly posts and, you know, pearls of truth and little tidbits here and there.
You guys, thank you so much for sharing on the Week Light podcast today. And it's been so good to hear your story. And I know that God is using it in so many other people's lives. So thank you for hanging out with me.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. And for those of you listening, go ahead and check out Rick and Tiffany's book and ministry, and keep colliding with Jesus. And we'll catch you next week.
Thanks for tuning in. To keep up with us, you can find us on Instagram at we.collide, on Facebook as at We Collide Women, and you can also visit our website at wecollide.net to find our blog, resources, event information, and more. One last thing. If you enjoyed this episode, would you take a few seconds and leave us a review? It seems like such a small act, but reviews help us to keep producing this content and help other women find it too. Thanks so much for tuning in to today's episode and letting us walk with you as you seek and collide with Jesus.